It's been said that every quilt tells a story, and it's so true. But I also believe every quilter has a story to tell. I wanted to hear about the people behind these wonderful quilts and thought you'd enjoy hearing about their lives also. Welcome to A Quilter's Life. Terry Tope is an internationally recognized teacher and lecturer who loves all types of appliqué. She is creative and full of life, which shows up as she's up early and gets more done before noon than most others accomplish all day. I meant to ask Terry about her motto. Well-behaved women seldom make history, so let's make little history. But I think a bit of that shows through in this interview. I love that she always finds something good about each day. Terry, thank you so much for joining us on A Quilter's Life. So glad to have you.
Oh, and I am so happy to be here.
I'm looking forward to this. Share about how you know Audra Rasnick.
Oh my goodness. So I'm an appliqueer. A couple of years ago, I was invited to be a teacher at the Academy of Appliqué in Williamsburg, Virginia. My classroom was right next to Audra's. We were both new to the academy, as teaching us the academy. I don't know, sisters from another mister. The two of us just clicked and were silly together and have such a good time. I think our students enjoy that camaraderie. And we'd only met each other that first week. Now, of course, we've had a couple under our belt and we look forward to having dinner with us during the academy and chat back and forth via Instant Messenger and Facebook. She's just become such a dear, sweet friend that shares my passion in appliqué.
She's a wonderful person. I enjoyed interviewing her.
She is so much fun.
Well, Terry, tell me where you were born and raised.
Oh, my goodness. So my father is a retired now Ohio State patrolman. So growing up, I lived all over the state of Ohio. I was born in Zanesville, and I think we've lived in Medina, which is a suburb of Cleveland or Akron. We lived in Gallipolis, Ohio. They moved to Brown, Georgetown, Ohio, and then back to Gallipolis. But I would say home to me is Gallipolis, which is along the Ohio River, southern Ohio.
Now, right where that is. Did Audra tell you that I'm in Marietta, Ohio?
Oh, she did not. So you're right up the river.
Yep. That's so cool. Well, I knew you were in Ohio because of your phone number.
Oh, there you go.
Well, share a special childhood memory.
The women of my family, every summer or every other summer, would take a convoy of cars and vans and head to Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, rent a beach house. It would be my mom and my three favorite aunts and assorted kids and grandkids and whoever was well-behaved enough to be invited along. And we would have a week-long adventure of just hanging out on the beach and doing things all week and no men. So we didn't really have to worry about what we ate. We could have pancakes for dinner if we wanted, or we could eat breakfast at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You never knew what was going to happen with that crew. And I, being the crafty one, ended up making t-shirts every year. My Aunt Mary was always the instigator, would come up with a theme, and I would make t-shirts for everybody so that we would match wherever we went. So we were that obnoxious group of tourists that ran all over the Outer Banks in our matching t-shirts.
How fun. What a neat tradition. Have you been able to keep that up at all?
I have taken my children down. In fact, it's one of those, Mom, are you really taking us on vacation by ourselves without Dad? And it was like, of course we can. And of course we got a flat tire and spent the night in a hotel. And I handled it like a champ. And I think I have very strong, wonderful women. I have three daughters that pretty much have learned, even through my little quilting business, that you put your mind to something, you can really do great things. I've created strong women, which is awesome. And I think I am a strong woman because of my aunts and my mom.
Yeah, that's so neat to be able to pass that on. Well, other than quilting, did you have other employment?
Oh my goodness, I have flung pizza. I have worked at a tennis club. I have worked in a quilt shop. I'm currently a site manager for a small business college in Columbus called Hondros. And I think I just luck into positions of customer service. I mean, if you think about, I have a degree in interior design. My first job was at the Worthington Decorators. I think that's what the name of the shop was. But I think I've always gone towards the more creative side of things. Got a degree in interior design. My in-laws own a furniture store in Southern Ohio, and I always thought we would end up living back there. I married my high school sweetheart. We will be married 44 years this May. But I think we always envisioned that we'd be back in Gallup Place and that I would work at the furniture store. That hasn't happened. We're pretty much stuck in Central Ohio now because my daughters and my grandkids are up here. So we're going to stay. I've done a lot of different crazy jobs, but have to say, I do like the one I'm currently doing because I work with usually second career students that are looking to get into insurance or real estate or home inspection. And so it's a neat way to helping people, even my age, do something a little bit different.
Interesting. Now, I'm curious, since you worked at a tennis club, did you play tennis?
I did. I can't say I was ever very good at it, but I enjoyed it. And we do enjoy pickleball.
I've been curious. I haven't played pickleball yet. So it looks close to tennis, but how close is it?
Well, it's less movement. It's more standing still. Regular tennis is hard on your knees and your back, and you're running all over the place. Pickleball, it's a lot easier. It's kind of almost like playing table tennis, but on a tennis court.
Interesting.
And anybody can do it. Maybe there's a pickleball quilt in my future.
Well, that question's coming up. Oh. So you mentioned that you're still in the Columbus area. How did you land there?
My husband is a graduate of the Ohio State University, and he's a graphic designer. And unfortunately, it's not a lot of call for graphic design at that time in Southern Ohio. So his first job was in Columbus. So I think that that's where we ended up because that's where he was employed.
Yeah, it would have to be one of the larger cities.
Yes.
Is there anything else about your family you wanted to share?
I have three amazing daughters, Andrea, Erin, and Hannah. I have four grandsons, which was a nice surprise for us because we had all girls. And I have a six-month-old granddaughter, just brand new granddaughter. So pretty lucky. So we're pretty much going to be in Columbus, Ohio for a while because the girls all still live here.
How nice to be close to family.
Exactly. Although tomorrow morning, I'll be driving down to Gallup Police to see my parents.
It's nice to have your parents still around.
Yes, and that's another reason we try to head down as often as we can.
But it's hard when you're still working, isn't it?
Yes, there aren't enough and sewing and trying to have a family life. And yeah, I lectured last weekend. I was at the academy a couple weeks ago. There just aren't enough hours in the day. I need to quit that full-time job. Not quite 65 yet, so we may have to wait a little bit.
I keep trying to figure out the same thing. But our business, we're entrepreneurs, so we own it. And I just can't quit my own business.
Yeah, as long as it's making you happy. I mean, and I think that I am probably a little ADHD and a little dyslexic and a little nutty. I can't just sit still. So to me, having that busy of a life is perfect. I'm up at the crack of dawn every morning, even on the weekends, and I get more done before noon than most people.
Well, I'm sure you get more done than I do because I don't feel like I fully wake up until noon.
I take the dog out first thing in the morning. She wakes me up probably and then have a nice big mug of coffee and I'm just raring to get onto a new project or a new idea. So many creative things going on in my head.
That is so cool. If you had the opportunity to talk to your great, great, great grandchildren, how would you describe yourself to them?
When I send you a picture of me, I have a lovely pair of just bright colored glasses. My glasses are tie-dyed or rainbow or the frames. And I complimented on them left and right every day. If I had a nickel for every time that I was complimented, I would be a rich person. I always tell everybody I'm the fun grandma. Because when they come to my house or when they're with me, they're having a good time. We could be creating something. We could be making confetti pancakes, or we made brownies in the waffle iron. We tie-dyed Easter eggs using old ties that I had bought at a thrift store to make some funny designs on them. We've played with chocolates and things turn out, and sometimes they don't, and they've always had a good time. So I think that if I have a legacy to leave, it would be different from my quilts, because it would be Grandma Terry. She was a lot of fun. We had so much fun at Grandma Terry's house. Or great Grandma Terry's house, because I could plan on being around.
And that's your grandma name?
Yeah, Grandma Terry. Yep.
Nice. And then what would you want to say to them to encourage them?
The world is such a crazy place. A lot going on. I would say to them to live each day for each day. Play it forward. Know that life's too short. I guess that's what I was searching for, is life is just too short not to have a good time and not to make memories and not to go to sleep happy. Do you know what I mean? That you've done something really cool or created something or had an adventure and you go to bed with a smile on your face, because that's my goal.
Since that's a goal, do you reach it often?
I do. I try. You know, life throws you hard knocks every now and then. But you know what? Out of those hard knocks, you can find a little glimmer of a good day. You know, there's always something that happens during the day, even if it's the sun coming through the trees during a sunset, that it's like, wow, that's beautiful. And periodically, my husband will say, we'll be sitting, you know, relaxing the evening, glass of wine. It's been a good day. And it's true. You know, it's been a good day. We may not have done anything that day, but it's been a good day.
How cool. Besides quilting, what other crafts do you do or have you done?
I grew up sewing. So I think that the majority of my life, it's just been sewing. I grew up garment sewing. My mom was our 4-H advisor. My older sister and I pushed the limits of making sure that our projects were amazingly fun and perfect. And mom really pushed the limits with us as far as making sure that we sewed them correctly. I think my sister made a fake fur jacket back in the late 70s with a zipper in it. And I swear that everybody in that competition thought that my mom had made it. But I think she taught us to sew the right way so that as adults, we can kind of break all the rules or create new ways of doing things, you know, figure out easier or simpler ways around some of those more technical things. I always tell everybody, Joyful Jumper was one of the 4-H projects in Ohio. And to me, it was not joyful because my mom made me take that zipper out. I don't know how many times. I'm just so surprised that even the fabric stayed together, because it wasn't good until it was perfect. You know, if you're going to do something right, do it the best you can. And you can do better than that. And so I can put in a pretty decent zipper. Now, have I? Maybe in a little zipper bag, because I don't garment sew anymore. I make big square flat things.
Well, some of those bags are pretty complicated anymore.
Oh, my favorite are the Joan Hollies, the Lazy Girl design bags. I can stitch those up in no time flat, and they're wonderful little zipper bags.
How about other hobbies you may have?
I don't really have other hobbies. I may have cross-stitched a little bit, and every now and then I still do. I've been working on a nativity scene for, about 7 years that keeps getting put back into the box. Because I'm a hand applicator and a hand quilter, I think that if I'm going to do handwork, it's going to be those. I love to buy other people's hand-dyed fabrics and yarns and things like that, but have no desire to create them myself. I told my husband we'd have to put another room on the house if I did, because my fabric collection's big enough as it is. So hanging out with my grandkids isn't really a hobby, but yeah.
Well, I'm also thinking with hobbies, did you say you play pickleball?
Oh, it's been a long time. And I think that is just something fun to do. I wouldn't call it a hobby. I still have my tennis racket too. So every now and then I go out and hit tennis balls, but not very often.
We just came across my tennis racket the other day. I don't even know if the strings are any good anymore.
Now that I think about it, mine probably needs tightened too.
So who introduced you to quilting?
Oh, so back in the probably early mid 70s, we all remember Little House on the Prairie. And we all remember how popular Holly Hobby illustrations were. I had Holly Hobby on everything. I even think we had wallpaper in my bedroom that mimicked it. But I think that the first quilt I ever made was just a nine patch, because I was going to be Laura Ingalls. I had a replica of an outfit, long skirt. I probably wore it a lot longer than I probably should have for Halloween, etc. We did garment sewing, but I think that the quilting bug was just sneaking in just a little bit then. Then when we got married, our first pregnancy didn't work out. Second one, they put me on bed rest. And I made my first quilt while sitting in our tiny little apartment with three channels on TV out of remnants from my in-laws furniture store. It's a Dresden plate. So I think that's where that first quilt was made in 1980, before it was cool to be a quilter, right?
Well, it was resurging about then, I think.
Yeah. 1976 with the bicentennial, I think that there's a little bit of a resurgence then. So that may have been when I picked up those and made those four patches. Yeah.
And I have to throw in Holly Hobby was the design on my bedspread in high school.
I loved her. And then in my senior year, gunny sack dresses were so much like that similar kind of country girl look. Yeah. I think if I didn't become a quilter, I probably would have gone into fashion. I would have gone into probably from learning all that stuff in 4-H, but I also like to draw outfits. So
do you still like to doodle?
I doodle all the time, but I haven't sewn garments forever. Although I was tempted to cut a quilt up and make a jacket out of it recently, but I ended up gifting the vintage quilt to one of my daughters for her daughter. I may still make a quilted jacket, but I think I will piece something and not use something vintage. I just have a hard time cutting up somebody else's hard work.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thought of making a whole quilt to cut up hasn't appealed to me either.
Yeah. There has to be a little light bulb of inspiration at some point for me to be able, I've got way too much fabric. And I was thinking, oh, I could put something scrappy together. Have I done it yet? No. But you never know when the bee's going to hit and Terry will be plugging away on something crazy. So
I had the opportunity to go to QuiltCon this year, and a lot of people are making like a quilted panel, putting it on the back of a denim jacket.
Ooh, now I did applique a big bee on the back of one of my denim jackets. So I'm not opposed to decorating things that are already created.
Well, thinking about a favorite quilt, it could be one that you made or one that someone else made.
I recently, about a month ago, I got a package on my front door. This all started with my grandma, Ethel Thompson Spinelli Hammonds. My grandmother was a head cook at Muskingum College in their cafeteria most of her life, had 10 children. And later in her life, she picked up quilting. It was probably after I picked up quilting, but she did a lot of kit quilts. And unfortunately, ended up through Alzheimer's, losing that ability to be able to finish quilts. and her goal was to make each one of her grandchildren a quilt. So my Aunt Jenny picked up that process and completed quite a few of them. And as Facebook friends with her, I've been able to see the results get shipped to California, Texas. A lot of my cousins have all received theirs. But everybody always said, well, Terry can make her own quilts. And I pretty much had my family covered with grandma quilts. All my siblings have received quilts. So my Aunt Jenny decided, well, you know what? Somebody needs to make one for Terry. And I think it was January. It had to have been January. So it was a few months ago. I can't believe it's March already. It was a box on my front porch when I got home from work for my Aunt Jenny. And I opened up the sweetest letter. Make sure that you read this before you open the quilt. And I sat there and bawled because nobody had given me a quilt ever. And this was just like one of those that she spent that much time making something specifically for me. And you talked about panels. It had a panel of the lighthouse at Cape Hatteras, the big striped lighthouse at Cape Hatteras in the middle with these beautiful blocks around it. And I didn't call her that night. I did call my mom crying and I said, I can't tell you. And she's, oh, Jenny told me she was going to send that to you. But if the people I give quilts to have anywhere near that experience that I did, it was amazing. I did call her the next day and we had a wonderful, wonderful chat. The label is wonderful on the back and the letter that she has been put away so that I can actually pack it up with the quilts someday when that legacy comes into play. People will know exactly why that quilt was made for me. And it's probably my favorite quilt to date. And I didn't make it.
Oh, that is so cool. What a special, special quilt to have.
And it's a special person, too, so I love her to death.
You've been quilting for a while, so you probably have seen the tools changing, but do you happen to have a favorite tool?
I do. A brand new sharp applique needle. I wish I could say it's my fancy Bernina sewing machine or all these rulers that I have bought through the years or some specialty thing, but I don't think we permit ourselves every now and then to open the package and get a new needle out because hand needles get dull also. And it just stitches like butter when it's brand new. And you don't realize that as easy as that is. The other thing would be my Karen K. Buckley little red-handed scissors. I can't live without them.
Do you like each step of the quilting process or is there a particular step that you really enjoy?
We had a conversation about this at the Academy recently. I hate finishing quilts. And it's a weird comment. I design my own, therefore that takes time. And then you spend so much time either hand sewing or hand stitching or hand appliquing. And by the time you put the binding on it, it's been your friend. It's what you pick up and work on when you get home in the afternoon or the evenings or first thing in the morning. And you miss it because you have to start all over again. I have to start designing something all over again. My favorite process, I always said that heaven to me would be sitting and applique. I picked up friends' applique at retreats and worked on it for them when my projects are done just because I needed to be sewing on something.
Well, with so much handwork on your quilts, how long does it usually take for you to make a quilt?
Because I do have lots of other life that goes on, full-time job and grandkids and sporting events, it does take me a little bit longer than a lot of people. I know Audra can just do a quilt in an amazing amount of time, but mine will take up to 6 months to a year, depending on what I'm creating, what I'm working on. Not to say that I don't have smaller projects that I work on that the wall hanging or a table runner or something along those lines that will be a lot quicker. But I usually have multiple things going on at the same time because, again, I'm that little ADH person that just jumps from one project to another.
Our minds all work different. And not only are we unique, but our projects are unique.
Definitely. Definitely.
Share your worst quilting experience.
I hand stitch a beautiful princess feather quilt on some jacquard fabric, black jacquard fabric, these beautiful princess feathers. It was lime green and yellow and orange with some big flowers on it, a repeat pattern. And this fabric that I stitched it onto was a heavy woven fabric, and I didn't like how the background showed through the yellow portions of these flowers. So before I quilted it, I turned it upside down and I kind of clipped out the excess fabric behind these yellow flowers. And then I had a friend machine quilt it. She did a beautiful job of custom machine quilting and brought it home, and it had some chalk lines on it and stuff. So I thought, oh, I'll wash this. And when I pulled it out of the water, the jacquard fabric just pulled away from all that applique that I clipped. And it ruined it. The whole thing was just shredded. It was awful. I will never, ever do that again. Wow. I had this perfectly good top that I ruined.
And there's no going back on that one.
There was no way to fix it. Absolutely no way to fix it. I kept it in my studio forever, and I just recently pitched it. Because I don't know why I was saving it. Yeah, it was terrible. That's the worst experience. Don't use jacquard fabric. It was beautiful to applique on it. It had these dots in it. And when you turn the fabric one direction or the other, they changed kind of color. So I fussy placed these blocks so that there was one up, one down, one up, one down. So that when you looked at the fabric, it looked like there were two different colors of blacks going on when it was all the one fabric, because it had this jacquard kind of weave of these dots. And it was so pretty before I washed it.
And I thought you were going to tell me you kept it so you could show it at your lecture.
Well, I kept it because I thought, I'm going to make it over again. I'm going to do it out of cotton this time, and I'm going to make it over again. And I'm the worst one at keeping my hand-drawn patterns. I did photograph it really well. So maybe someday, I rarely make things twice. And so maybe someday I'll think about redoing it. But yeah, I have good photographs of it. I think that's why I decided I could pitch it.
Wow. Well, obviously we can spend our time, especially in our country, we get to choose what we want to do.
Yes.
And what keeps you quilting when there's anything else in the world you could do?
It's the one thing I'm passionate about. It's the one thing that drops my heart rate down, that when the world is a little crazy, I can lock myself into my space. And that's even in just my brain, and kind of get away from everything a little bit. My husband will say, especially when the kids were small, why don't you just go in your studio, Terry? I'll handle this. Just go into your studio. When he knows that I just had enough, you know, sometimes it's a little bit too much. And now there's a lot going on in the world that isn't great. And so it is my one happy place. It is where I get to go. And I've made the best friends ever. So those two, my friend circle, the people that I hang with, are all quilters, mostly.
If not all the quilters I meet are just wonderful people.
Well, I joined a quilt guild. Oh, gosh. I was pregnant with my youngest 27 years ago. And my life changed exponentially. You don't realize those little moments that make a big impact on your world. I had been kind of a closet quilter. I'd been sewing out of scraps and bits and pieces. And first time I walked into a real quilt shop, I was totally overwhelmed. But went to a guild meeting. They sat all the newbies down together. And a few of those newbies are still my close friends. I depend on them. They're the ones I'm texting back and forth. They're the ones I texted this morning and say, do you like this corner on this border that I just stitched up? You know, it's a little clunky, but I think it's getting there. I always know that when I send my questions out to them or my pictures out to them, that they're going to give me their honest answer, which is probably what I was looking for in the first place. It's like, I don't like it. And they're going to tell me they don't like it either. Or they're going to tell me that's awesome. But they're the ones I look for validation for just about anything.
How wonderful. I'm just picturing the close-knit friends that you've been able to make. That is so cool.
Well, during COVID, I'm a people person. I'm my mother's daughter. My work sent me home. I was working at a computer at home. My husband was working his computer in the basement. And I was having a hard time. I was getting cabin fever. It was pretty rough. A good friend of mine, Kathy Mackley, invited me over in January, into January, to sit 6 feet away from her in her garage with two or three of my other friends. And we were very careful with our mask and sitting apart just to have coffee on a Sunday morning. And we continually did that. The weather finally got better and we went out to her back deck. And now there are still Sundays when we all get together at her house and have coffee, even after, because we needed that 20 minutes to an hour of just sitting and having coffee with other people and discussing quilting and life and kids and anything and everything. And those are quilters. You know, we need to have each other. We need to have that guild meeting or that little get together.
So many people can relate to that. Well, Terry, who do you make your quilts for?
I used to make them for a purpose, for a room or for a child or for a baby gift or for a wedding gift or for a graduation gift. Now I make them because I came up with a great idea and I want to make this quilt. It has no reason. There is no special event. I just need to get whatever creative, fun thing that I have been inspired by out of my head and into fabric. Sometimes that works. Other times it is a little goofy. I recently finished a quilt based on a piece of fabric that they dated back to Queen Elizabeth I. Was back in 2020 noodling around on the internet because I was bored to death sitting in my house all by myself. And in back in England, they found a piece of cloth at a church that they believed they dated back to belonging to Queen Elizabeth I. And it's like the only remnant of embroidery that they can date back to that particular time. And it was made with silver cloth, which was evidently back then only royalty wore silver cloth. And the threads and colors of dyes were from all over the world, which also meant that it was probably a royal garment. But as you looked at the images of these beautiful botanicals on this, they had taken an embroidered underskirt and then repurposed it into an altar cloth. Isn't that a total quilty thing to do? These ladies were right up my alley. I probably could have lived back then. But this piece of embroidery, you'll have to look it up, Bacton altar cloth, has the wackiest flowers and bugs and dragons and a lot of snakes, because evidently they represented something, little people in boats, little soldiers, all these neat little images that were just embroidered into this cloth that then she wore. So I played around with enlarging them the best I could on the computer and printing them out and made a quilt that I called Thank You, Elizabeth, because it was all because of this weird piece of fabric. But yeah, that's how my mind works. And that's where my quilts seem to come from. The moment hits that you need to create something different, and it will then go into my lecture or turn into a pattern or a class. But that's where they come from. Yep.
Oh, cool. What a neat find.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful piece of embroidery. And then, of course, you dive into all her other dresses. And if you look at a lot of her paintings, she's got one that has ears on the dress. I wonder if it was a real dress because she's always listening. It was just like, she's quirky.
What are you working on right now?
The borders that I was working on this morning, kind of in between projects. So I have one that I keep putting up and picking up and putting down. And there's a commercial pattern out for the Cashwell carpet quilt. But then I looked at the original Cashwell carpet, and there's a blue cat, and there's a chicken, and there's all these crazy flowers. And so I'm kind of doing my own version of that. And it's on navy blue grunge fabric is my background, and everything else, all these bright, fun flowers came out of my stash. And then for borders, I decided that I was going to applique feathers, a feathered border, but it's appliqued. It's not quilted. And it's turning out pretty darn cool. Yes, you can applique a feather. It takes a little bit of prep work, but they're pretty cool. And I'll have to send you some pictures of some individual pieces so that you have that to post. But hopefully in a quilt show someday, or on my website, someday they'll be able to see it. It won't be a pattern because obviously there's a commercial pattern out there. Again, it was something I needed to do. So
that sounds so interesting. I'm picturing a feather in different ways outlined, or?
Yeah, each one of the little humps or the little plumes of a quilted feather. So I drew the quilted feather on a piece of freezer paper, and then I cut out each piece. James Hounswick, appliqueur from Pennsylvania, had a book out once called, I think, Artful Appliqué. And she did this process for these beautiful flowers where she sewed one piece on top of another piece and then cut it away and then sewed that piece on top of another piece to create these beautiful fans and feathers and for birds and these hibiscus flowers. So I think that these feathers are kind of made in that same process, but following obviously a different design. Yeah, I just need a picture. It's pretty cool. I've never seen it before, so it's pretty cool. I'm working on the corners. The corners were hard because I could make a swag pretty easy, but the corners, and that's why I had to get it out of my head this morning. So that's why I was up at 4:30.
Share a quilting tip.
When you pull your thread off of your spool, the end that you pull off should be the short end through your needle. And when you cut the thread, that's where you should knot it. Because the way the manufacturer makes a piece of thread is they wind it. And if you think of a screw going into a piece of wood, it has the correct drill kind of marks that will take it into the wood. Well, the same thing with thread, when it comes off of the spool, that's the direction that will spin easier into your thread. And the same thing with your sewing machine. When you thread your sewing machine, obviously, you pull it right off the end, and that's what goes through the needle. And so it's wound correctly. If you find your thread is knotting when you're hand sewing, it's probably because you've knotted the wrong end.
Huh. My mind is racing with, okay, how am I threading my needle? I think I'm doing it right.
But it's one of those little things that can change. You know, there are a lot of people that don't like applique. You know, yeah, I don't like piecing because I don't like doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I also get those lefty righties mixed up really, really easy. But with applique, sometimes they don't like it because they haven't had a good experience doing it. So sometimes just changing that knot can help them make a little bit better experience.
Interesting. Well, you've created a business with quilting. How did it go from being a hobby to becoming a business?
I was one of the founding members to the Applique Society years ago. When it first started coming out, I think I was probably the 80th person that signed up for that first year. They had a challenge, and I made a little wall hanging with cone flowers on it out of the challenge fabric and sent it off, and it won an award. I don't think it got first place, but it won an award. And I took it into my local quilt shop, the Glass Thimble in Columbus. And Bev Young, who owned the shop, was the ultimate business person and said, well, now you got to teach a class on that. And of course, to teach a class, you have to have a pattern. And when you're married to a graphic designer, that's really not a big bounce to figure out how to create it. Back then, we used to take photographs and glue those onto the front of cardstock to make the covers for our patterns. And he helped me get it copied. And yeah, that was my first pattern. And that was my first adventure into teaching, all because of my local quilt shop.
So it wasn't like you planned this all out and got a business.
It was not. Somebody once asked me if I had a business plan, and it was like, well, this is just the fun. I didn't realize I had to have a business plan. I slowly found out that I could do more and more things, that I could teach at guilds, I could teach at quilt shows, I could travel. I've been to Japan. I mean, all these fun little things all started because I won a little award back in the early 90s. And I'm also pretty ornery, so I tend to get my face in front of people. And Terry Taupe is easy to remember.
And is that the name of your business then?
It's Taupe Creative. It was just an easy way to pop in that. It's Taupe Creative with the government and with sales tax, et cetera. My website is just Terry Taupe. I think I originally had my first website. My business name was Material Girl Designs. It was before Madonna had her song out, because material has my name in the middle of it, M-A and then capital T-E-R-I-A-L. So I had, you know, my name was in the middle of material. So I was the original Material Girl Designs. But I found that people weren't searching for me that way. When they looked you up in the internet, they looked you up for your name. And so that's why we changed it to Terry Taupe and Taupe Creative.
Interesting. I did see Material Girl out there, and I thought there was another business with this.
Yeah, there is. There's Material Girls, and they're still out there. But I was Material Girl Designs. So, but like I said, that was a long time ago, and I'm now going by Taupe Creative.
So when did you start the business?
Is it a business? No, I'm teasing. When did I start it? Goodness. 1998, 99. It wasn't really a business to start out. It just turned into a business. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, if you're going to sell patterns, you have to have a vendor's license and you have to get registered with the state and all those wonderful things that follow up with paperwork with my accountant and trying to decide if it's a home business or whether it's on its own. For a lot of years, I piggybacked off of my husband's business, which was also Taupe Creative. He's a graphic designer. And I was able to also do business as Material Girl Designs under his, but he's retired from that company. And so I kind of just took over his company, if that makes sense.
It does to me.
I didn't have to refile and do anything. And he can still do stuff off of it if he does a little freelance work here or there. So he's still able to use that too.
Yeah. Well, thinking of the excitement when you started up, I'm thinking of the class that you had to start with that quilt shop when she wanted you to do a class. Do you remember when people started signing up?
I think it was mostly guild members and people in the shop. She hung the sample in the shop and we did one cone flower block. I think I also went to a couple other local guilds in Columbus and taught the same little project. Yeah, that was my first little venture into it, and shockingly successful. I mean, I wasn't really expecting to turn it into anything. I mean, it was just something fun I did for my kids and to decorate my house, and I was good at it. I love lecturing, especially taking in my quilts then. So yeah, it was a great experience. Beth Young and the Glass Symbol, you either loved her or hated her. I mean, she was a great shop owner, but she was also a business person. And I think that she helped me hugely in learning the ups and downs of how to do what professional teachers, et cetera, do, but also pushed me to do more so that she could sell more.
Well, that was your class or a workshop. But then you also started giving lectures. So do you remember where your first lecture was?
For the Quintessential Quilters in Columbus, Ohio, for my guild, was my very first lecture. And I took in about 20 of my quilts, including the very first quilt I ever made back there when I was into Little House on the Prairie that my mom quilted with onto a preset. She finished it. I just made the squares. But I usually had my first quilt and my last quilt and was my journey between. I told little stories with each one of them and pulled everything off kids' beds, et cetera. I found out I was a little funny, so they had a good time. And that just encourages you to do it more. You made people laugh.
And if I'm correct, you still offer that lecture.
Yeah, that lecture is called Girl with a Checkered Past and a Future in Piecing. And it's different every single time I do it because it's the more recent quilts. I probably have 300 quilts in my studio upstairs, hidden and tucked and quilted pieces. So every lecture is going to be a little bit different, but it's usually, these are my older quilts and here's what I'm doing now. Really like to encourage people that I didn't start out making what I'm doing now. I want to show them that I started out here and ended up here, and the progression and the ornery stories that went with the quilts, because there's some cute ones. I made my husband a blooming nine patch back when those were popular, out of fabric that had flames, and it's black and orange and red. And I was also going through a little bit of a change myself. So I called it my hot flash quilt, but he calls it his hot rod quilt. Well, I didn't enjoy it, but because I'm going to tell you, there was a lot of left and right. It's weirdly put together because you put together on an angle and everything has to line up right. It's not like an applique quilt where I can just put it where I want to put it. It has a plan. My guild recently had their 40th anniversary. I think it was 2 years ago. We do a president's challenge every year. And for the 40th anniversary, they decided they wanted red and white quilts. And so I decided I was not going to make an applique quilt. I was going to do something that totally different than what I normally plan, because I didn't want anybody to know that it was mine, because they have a tendency to like, oh, that's Terry Tope. She appliques, or she went way over the top on this. So I did a fractured flower quilt in red and white that'll give you equilibrium problems, because it's just this vibrant red and white quilt, and nobody knew it was mine when we then hung them all up. So I do piece under duress. I will piece when I have to, but I prefer applique.
I love seeing the different strengths of different people. That's so fun. Now, when you're teaching, tell me how satisfying it is when you actually see the light come on in a student's eyes.
It's the best thing in the world. It is the best thing in the world. With applique, there's a lot of prep work. There's a lot of getting to that point. But by the end of the day or in the middle of the day, I teach a lot of reverse applique. And that just sounds totally foreign to a lot of people. And then once they are actually sitting and doing it, it's like, this is awesome. This is great. I don't like applique, but I like this. It is sharing a piece of yourself to someone who obviously picked a project because they like the end result look of what the project was, or to learn a new technique, and being able to instill in them a little bit of your world. This is what Terry Tope does, and she's sharing it with you. And all of a sudden, they're going to share it with somebody else, or they're going to hang it up at their local quilt show, and somebody will look at that reverse applique saying, how in the world did she do that? That's the moment where they put a ruched flower on something and it's, what is that? I want to touch that. How did you do that? And they get to then pass on that same information. And I'm all about having a good time. I don't do it if I don't enjoy it. Someday when my children go through my studio and find the box of unwanted objects, like the Island of Misfit Toys, there is the box of, yeah, we're not going to do that. It's going to stay there, and that'll be their little project to worry about later. I don't throw them away, but I don't necessarily finish them. You know, I'm not liking this. I don't really need to do this. We may end up confiscating the rest of that project's fabric and do something else with it. But it's funny. I do have that strange little box of misfit projects. Sometimes those blocks end up on the front of bags or on the back of a jacket. You have a nice big bumblebee on the back of your jacket.
It's great to do repurpose when you can.
Yes.
Now, Terry, is there anything else about your business you wanted to share?
I got a lot of help along the way. And I would say the best advice I would have for somebody that wants to get into doing this is ask the questions. Other quilters love to help. I mean, that's kind of what we do. If I was able to do a lot of things, I had conversations with other teachers. I listened. I went to their classes to see how they taught, because I know when I took classes, what I liked and what I didn't like. And so I emulated the people that I like. I do a lot of one-on-one with my students because I'm not the person that's going to sit behind the desk at the front of the room and just kind of lecture the class. But the best advice or the best direction or the best business advice is ask questions and get help. If you want to do something, find out somebody locally or in your guild that is already doing it and see how they do it. See how you can fit their process into what you're able to do. Start out small. You don't have to have your stuff in a catalog in order to have a fun little side business that can turn into something a lot bigger. We need teachers. The quilt shows need teachers. Your local guild needs lecturers. There's things that you can do in your local guild to try out your process on unsuspecting quilters. No, that's teasing. But you could easily share. And that's how I did it. They were my guinea pigs and they loved it.
And I'm sure they learned a lot along the way.
Oh, and I learned a lot because I learned from every class I go to.
And where can we find your business?
I am 100% online. My website is territope.com. It's 2 4-letter words, so it's easy. T-E-R-I-T-O-P-E. I know both of those words can be spelled multiple different ways, but I'm just easy peasy, territope.com. But yeah, you can find me online. I also post almost every day on Instagram and or Facebook. You're only going to see really ornery fun things or pictures of my grandkids, but definitely my projects. So you can see that new casual carpet quilt revealing itself in the next couple of, in the last few months, you'll see bits and pieces of it. But yeah, I try to post something fun every day or silly. So working on a YouTube channel, maybe someday.
Well, thank you, Terry, for joining me on A Quilter's Life. This has been so much fun hearing your story.
You are so very welcome. I really appreciated being invited.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You can find more stories on aquilterslife.com or subscribe on your favorite podcast player so each episode will be downloaded automatically. Also, I want to hear about you and your wonderful quilts. Please contact me, Paula Chamberlain, through the website to set up an interview. And as always, thanks for listening.